Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Global Emotional Awakening Telesummit. This is day one. That's right. You are on the ground floor, and we are so grateful that you're joining us. Thank you so much for coming. I am your MC for this event, JJ Fredrickson, and I'm joined with Carrie Ann Barron, who is the founder of this telesummit, host of this telesummit, and founder of Tenacious Living. Hello, Carrie Ann.
Hello. How are you?
I am doing great on this beautiful day one.
I know. It's hard to believe that we're here, we're finally, and we're into our second call of the first day. This is really happening.
Yes. So exciting. Now, I want to remind people who maybe missed that first call this morning. It was with war veteran Brian Fleming, who's known as the blown up guy. And I love that he takes that with him and he carries that badge with him and has been able to inspire people all over the world with his message. So I was so glad he could be with us this morning. If you missed his interview, that audio, that replay is available for free for the next 48 hours. And he gave a whole host of different tools to use, ways to reframe things. And so if you want to keep that audio, I just want to remind you, check out our gold ticket. It is on sale these first few days for those of you who have jumped in on the Global Emotional Awakening Telesummit on this ground floor. For those of you who have joined us this first day, the second day, we want to thank you, and that's how we're doing it. So we are on to our next speaker, though. Enough about Brian, because we have another spectacular gentleman with us today, right?
We do. We have Steve King. It is wonderful to have him here. So
yes. I'm so excited to get into an interview, but first I just wanted to ask you a question about today because it is day one, and you're leading us through this whole process of emotional awakening day by day. So what is it on day one that you're looking for people to get, looking for our listeners to hopefully grab onto?
Today, really the focus is understanding what's happening. Why am I feeling like this? Why do I feel this emotional chaos? So today, by the end of today, I want to be able to, or myself and the speakers, to let our listeners know that they really have an opportunity to, you know, there is a possibility to escape that emotional chaos, and there is hope that they can transform their overwhelm with grace, gratitude, and tenacity, and using all of the concepts that our speakers share with them. So that really is my hope, is just instilling the spark, igniting that spark of hope, letting you guys know that you're not alone, that there is a way out of that emotional chaos, and there is a way to transform your overwhelm. What you're feeling right now is something that you can move through.
Yeah, and our guests are not only incredibly inspirational, incredibly able to instill hope in our listeners, but they're also really great teachers. They've been through phenomenal experiences, and they have taken their experiences and use it to serve others and help others get out of just what you're talking about, Carrie, and that chaos, that emotional chaos, that overwhelm. I love it.
Yeah.
So, next up, I should say, is Steve King, as we mentioned. And I'm just going to give him a little intro here, and then I'm going to have you take it away with the interview. So Steve King is joining us live. He has a Bachelor's of Science degree in Health and Human Services and is a registered clinical counselor. He is also an avid runner, race walker, triathlete, and race announcer, and in 2012, he was inducted into the BC Athletics Hall of Fame. He has an avid interest in healthy balance and holism and has worked at Pathways Addictions Resource Center in Pennington since 1989 and authored the energy psychology book, Rapid Recovery, Accelerated Information Processing and Healing, and co-edited Running in the Zone. So without further ado, here is Carrie Ann and Steve King.
Welcome to the Telesummit, Steve. How are you today?
Well, I'm very delighted to be speaking with you, Carrie Ann. Unfortunately, I'm not as well as I'd like to be. For the first time in years, I've got a bit of a flu, but reflecting on it, it does add to what this title is all about in terms of looking at grace, gratitude, and tenacity and the issue of being overwhelmed. So I reflected on what's happened the last few days and building up to this. I felt at one point overwhelmed, wondering what I should do about it, but as it's turned out, I'm very grateful almost for it, because it helps me reflect on how fortunate I am to have good friends and an incredible lady in my life who's been my wife for over 35 years. So.
What was it that kind of got you in this place of overwhelm that you were talking about over this past week?
It was just a lot of work stuff going on, and having to cancel a day full of clients, and normally I would hate to do that, but I certainly didn't want them to suffer with this thing. But I had to then get down to Vancouver, and I was unable to drive, so my wife drove us down. I was emceeing two events, commentating at UBC, and then at the Vancouver Sun Run, and that goes on for hours. And I knew I'd be having a tough time just finding the energy, and also coughing and spluttering my way through it. But fortunately, with the aid of on-off switches on mics and doing some of my own energy routines, I was able to come through that. And with the help of a friend at the Sun Run, we managed to get it done. And I don't think it was too obvious to many people. So then I was looking at, should I ask you for a different date or something in terms of doing this? But I wanted to, do the best I could. And I think that's what life comes down to. You prepare the best you can, and then you've got to go with the flow and do the very best you can on any given time. But again, just the appreciation that calling upon a friend at the last minute to come and assist me, having my wife do pretty much everything for me, it was just amazing that we still got it done.
Well, it sounds like you've got a really good support system around you, which is probably something that you've been working on building. I heard you say something about your own energy routines. Can you just briefly, before we go into the main concept of changing lenses, what does, when you say I was working on my energy routines, what does that look like to you?
Well, I have a two-minute energy protocol that I do every morning first thing, like an energy warm-up. It's simply because I don't want to be in any state of reversal when I'm working with anyone or doing any work whatsoever, just for the sake of the ability to always do the best I can under any given circumstances. We are subject to our thoughts, of course, including our dreams, what's around us, any toxicity. So you can have toxic thoughts, toxic environment, and that can impact us in many different ways. And so our system can be in a state of reversal at times. We are hit with all sorts of information that can overwhelm our system, and that can be financial, situational, relational, a whole slew of possibilities, food allergies. So there's a myriad of things, anxieties, phobias, fears, traumas, and those are things I work on with other people. But in order to work successfully, I feel we've got to take good care of ourselves. So I use a number of things. In fact, if anyone's interested in what I do, it's things like adrenal massage, collarbone breathing, EFT. I use a generic format if there's nothing that I need to work on specifically, and that just tunes me up, so to speak.
I love that. When you talk about tuning me up, because in your work you talk about overwhelm, and we're talking actually right now about the healthy balance and the holism. So how does that, what are those, they sound like opposites. So can you explain a little bit about healthy balance and holism as it relates to overwhelm?
Well, holism means recognizing, to me, it means recognizing the entirety of a person's situation. It's like when we talk about someone who has good bedside manner, we're not talking about someone who can be very mechanical in terms of prescribing the right medicines. We want the person to be able to do that, but it also means that they're asking questions as to how things may have come about. What's the person's mental status? If you talk to chiropractors, they talk about the triad of health, for instance. The mental, the emotional, the physical, the chemical are all sort of intercombined. And so if one of them's out of whack, it affects the other two areas. So if the chemical's out of whack, the structural and the emotional also, therefore, are in trouble.
So what are those three areas again, like the different areas?
Yes, the emotional, mental as one, the structural and the chemical.
So what does the structural look like?
Well, if anyone goes to a chiropractor, a spinal alignment, for instance, would be something that can cause, or misalignment causes all sorts of problems. And so that's usually one of the first things they look at, is doing a full alignment.
Okay.
So you've got people who do heavy-duty work, and it causes all sorts of grief. You've got athletes who may overstress their system. So we have to look at how do we take care of the whole person, but also what's going on in someone's emotional life. If someone's in a stressful relationship, that does matter because it does impact their overall health.
Mm. So you've just recently, you're sick and you've been doing all of this, but you said up until recently you haven't experienced anything like this. So before this weekend, you obviously have had a wonderful career with this. What triggered you into getting into all of this work? What was the trigger way back when you started?
Well, it's interesting because I would never have seen myself doing this as a young man. I was on the stock exchange in London for a number of years and came here and decided I wanted something totally different. I volunteered for a while with children in terms of recreation and being like a big brother. And then I ended up working with special needs for children, and it was usually children who had some level of abuse that had occurred to them. But many of them came from family systems that were a bit broken down, sometimes with addictions, etc. And so I realized we can show children options, but oftentimes they were placed back into the same family environment and the same governing family rules. And I felt, therefore, I really should be working with the adults. So that's where the rule changes occur, so to speak. So if they would change their way of handling things or their belief systems, then hopefully the children can have a much healthier life, as well as knowing these options well in advance of growing into adulthood.
Mm. Is there a difference between the types of overwhelm between children and adults?
Well, I think there is. Einstein said there's only one real question, and that is the universe safe? And we could have a fairly safe childhood, protective childhood, and then maybe struggle as an adult. Just being a parent can be a bit of a struggle in many different ways. But if you're a child who's come into a detrimental environment or a very fearful one, then you're affected at that early age. And that will impact the rest of your life unless you do things to acknowledge it and work to clean and clear it, so to speak, so that you challenge those belief systems or beliefs about yourself that you may have grown up with. They need to be collapsed, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So you not only, like, you work with adults in the pathways addiction, but you also work with athletes. Is there a similarity or a difference? What types of overwhelm did you see with the different sectors of people that you're working with? Or is there a difference?
I think there are some differences. I mean, specifically with the addictions, I specialize mostly in traumas and fears and phobias and anxieties. Whereas with athletes, it may be the mental game. In other words, some people self-sabotage, and nearly everyone that comes to see me here at the Addiction Center, they acknowledge that they self-sabotage. They know one thing but do another. They drink too much or take drugs, and they know it's not good for them, so to speak.
Mm.
Whereas some athletes may have self-sabotaging or limiting self-beliefs and therefore not believe that they're good enough or that they can make it, or even small things like hating to run hills, or not being a good climber, or not having speed as a swimmer if you're a triathlete. All these things can make a difference.
Mm. So
it is about collapsing barriers, is what I would say.
Collapsing barriers. Overall, it's all about the collapsing the barriers. I love that.
Yes.
So,
and the other thing becomes, sorry to interrupt you there.
No, that's fine.
You just got me onto a thought. The other thing becomes the ability to actually enjoy the unfoldment of the process rather than just the end result. Because if you go by just the end result, in other words, a time on a clock or something, then you can be very dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one thing to like always have those numbers, but it can also, like you said, it can really limit you into, oh well, I can only do this or I can only do that. And that really, even with the people that are dealing with those fears and the phobias, they also have that feeling, correct? Where they're like, well, I tried that and it didn't work, so I'm not going to do it again.
Yes, or so, a fear of not being an expert straight away.
Yeah, yeah. That fear of
so it limits those things you're willing to even step into and attempt, or it may limit those things that you love to do but you believe you're no good at, or you've been told you're no good at. And someone once said, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And I actually totally agree. Most women love to dance, thank goodness, but there's a lot of men who are reluctant to do so. And you imagine if men really didn't care how good they were compared to other people, but did it to please their partners, they would have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And so would their partners.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really interesting way to look at it, right? Now, you were mentioning a little bit more about earlier about anxieties. And on your website, you talk about the three ultimate anxieties. So as we're talking through these different clients, there, you were talking about on your website, you note three, freedom, isolation, and meaningless. So can you tell our listeners a little bit of the difference between those three?
Certainly. Well, initially that relates to existentialism, the existential anxieties, knowing death is inevitable. We can choose our attitude and its meaning, but a lot of people don't realize that until... You know, usually we're looking at existentialism in our 40s and 50s, but some people it's in their 70s and 80s when it's a little tougher to choose what you can do because you may have lost some of your abilities, of course. So the other ultimate anxiety has been freedom, which is the awareness that we are the authors of our own lives. And therefore, we've got all those what ifs. What if I did this? What if I did that? What if this happened? But when we realize we are the authors of our own lives, there's a freedom in it, but for a lot of people, there's actually a fear in that. Mm. Many people lead lives that are dictated by others. But there's a part of us that wants to break away from that because the one thing we can author is how we choose our attitude towards whatever's going on. Meaninglessness, that means... in a sense, if you look at isolation being the second part of that, isolation means really the awareness that we are fundamentally separate from all other people. At one level, we are islands, even though people can relate to how we may feel about something. They can have empathy, but we are the ones living our personal life.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of meaninglessness, knowing all of that, we ask ourselves sometimes why am I bothering getting up each morning? And that's where, you know, people who do that, they're living in what you might call an existential vacuum. And so we have to look at really what makes us happy. And someone once said something that I thought was wonderful. What makes us happy is making other people happy. And that always seems to be the end result. So if we've found ourselves being stubborn victims at times, we have to look and say, wouldn't it be healthier if I was a tenacious survivor? That I can put this behind me. A wise gentleman once said, healing doesn't mean the damage never existed. It means the damage no longer controls our lives.
Mm, I love that. And it is. So the three anxieties, freedom, isolation, and meaningless. What do you say to those people that are having trouble getting out of bed and, you know, they wake up and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to just the day to be over already. How do you manage those anxieties, or what happens with people in that state of anxiety and emotional chaos?
Well, as someone once said, and I think I put that on my Facebook for you, sometimes the only thing left to hang on to is letting go. And I will ask people, are you willing to humor me? Yeah, the fact that you're here, we might as well use this time and see if there's anything at all that can make a difference for you. And if they are willing to, which I've never had anyone walk out of the office at that time, that's when I say, just humor me, we'll go through this and see if we can make any significant change. And that's when I'll use some of the tools that I'm aware of and that I have used for some while, because you know, with the way we have referred to overwhelm, for me it's just been too much. It may be the straw that broke the camel's back, but it may be shock, trauma, emotional overload of some sort. But to me, that can be a deep depression, of course, as well, if it's tough for someone to get out of the bed. But I would say they've blown a fuse. You know, that's the way I look at that sort of overwhelm. But if it's deep depression and very specific to something, I would say if there were a way that we could release that, collapse it, dissipate it, are you open to that happening? And then I would use one of the tools that I have, energy medicine tools that are out there, and they're very, very useful. I was fortunate enough to study under Dr. Roger Callahan via Dr. Lee Poulos. This was in the early 90s at UBC. And from there, that was the Callahan technique, which became thought field therapy and then became emotional freedom technique. I used tapas acupressure technique, whole brain integration, a whole slew of different things. And one of the great things about those tools is the fact that not only do they work, they can work very quickly. I used to do a lot of hypnosis, and quite successfully, that would take maybe 3 months to work on a very, very serious issue, meaning once every 2 or 3 weeks for 3 months. Sometimes in session now, we can do that work quite easily in one session. Mm-hmm. And that's a difference for me. It's finding tools at work that are effective, that don't cost anything, basically. They don't need a prescription, so, and that you can teach clients easily, and they're not dependent on the counselor. They can utilize them any time they wish to. And to me, that is the ultimate.
It really is.
Even EMDR, which is a wonderful tool and used a lot, but they still have to rely on the counselor.
Mm-hmm.
They become dependent on the counselor.
So once they identify, because not every technique works for everyone, right? There is trial and error. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
So the willingness.
We have been taught to resist things that don't feel good, so who wants to go there? But these emotions are a record of the past, and the body is living in the past. And so what we're trying to do is, therefore, get them to be present. If you look at historical stuff, that's where anxiety is always from. If you look at future stuff, in other words, anticipatory anxiety, that's where depression lies. So the role or the goal is to try and get someone to be fully in the present so that everything is cleaned and cleared. And that's where forgiveness also comes in. Anyone who knows me knows that I also relate to what they call Ho'oponopono and things like radical forgiveness. We need to do that. It just means to let go. But when you first bring that up to people, you can understand that they're saying, how can I possibly forgive this person? They don't deserve it. But as you know, it has nothing to do with that person deserving forgiveness, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one it's still poisoning, and it becomes like a parasite that eats you away from the inside.
Yeah. It's, you know, you've got my mind. There's so many different aspects of what you're saying I want to cover. It's so true, though, right? Because everything that we need is within us, yet we still need to have the willingness and the capacity to ask someone to support us to finding that peace within us that we really resonates so that we can work on ourselves, by ourselves. So as much as, you know, we're in control of everything that we think, we have all of those choices, and that's going to lead us to some of the questions that I want you to talk about. But it is ultimately, you still need that support. You need to reach out and say, I can't do this on my own. I need to figure out, someone needs to give me another way to help this. And with that resistance that you're talking about, well, I tried it, doesn't work, so I'm not going to bother trying anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that's really part of this whole telesummit, is providing them with all these different ways and opportunities and teachers and mentors who can support them in finding the peace that works for them to get them through
Absolutely.
These anxieties. So thank you so much for bringing that up. And that really brings us to, you earlier you were mentioning existentialism, and I have a hard time pronouncing that word, so I apologize in advance. because it's not a word I use every day. But what do you find are the issues that you face around existentialism and the questions it poses?
Well, the questions it poses to me are, what am I doing with my life? What would I like to do with my life? What's the meaning and purpose of my life? A young man once came to me and said, when I was a childcare worker, he said, do you know what the purpose of life is? And I gave him some sort of answer. I can't even remember what I said. And he said, no, it's procreation. And I said, who the heck told you that? And he said, my teacher. I said, well, I think I need to have a chat with your teacher, because those of us, I have three stepsons, or I had three stepsons, I have two now, but I'm not a parent. What does that say to the rest of us that may not choose to have children? And I don't believe that's the reason, but the purpose of life is a life of purpose. And it's very personal. The word enthusiasm comes from the Greek, to be with God. And therefore, what does that mean? If we have passion and enthusiasm, it means something is drawing us personally. You were drawn to do an Ironman for one good reason. You know, but you know what that reason is. You don't necessarily have to share it with anybody, but you know what it is. And there are many people who say, do Ironman, for instance, who get tattoos. I have a friend who's a tattoo artist, and I asked him one day something about tattoos and the fact that I personally don't wish to have any, but he said, well, look at you. You take a look at your office. You've got eagles everywhere. They draw you. You're drawn by them. And he said, and the same happens with tattoos. Either the tattoo gods call to you or they don't. And the same with, you know, we have to look at what draws us. What are we passionate about? What would we pay to do if we're lucky enough to be a professional sports person? We should be so grateful, because sports are things that we often pay a lot of money to do because we just get so much joy from it. But to be paid to do that, you imagine that. But if you're fortunate enough to have a job that you really enjoy, then it's not really a job. A lot of people have said to me, you must be in a bit of a rut. You're doing the same thing year after year. And I say, if that's your definition of a rut, you're absolutely right. I'm with the same woman in the same house, in the same community. I commentate at many of the same races. I am doing the same job that I've done for 25 years, and I love it. And I have absolutely no regrets. But I do fill in the blanks with other things that I enjoy doing, including traveling to specific locations.
So what are some of the questions that, what am I doing? What is my purpose? What other questions would you say that that really poses to us?
Well, one of the things, people talk about the bucket list. A lot of people saw the film that talked about bucket list with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. Wonderful stuff. And I used to have a list, and I have it right in my drawer. In fact, if I reach in, I've got it here. And I used to say to clients, if you were 90 years or 100 years old and you're looking back at your life, what would you want to make sure you've accomplished, achieved, or experienced? And I decided one time, here I was many years ago suggesting this to clients, and I hadn't really done it myself. But the moment I wrote it down, which was the next day I realized that, it took me only 20 minutes. And this was probably 25 years ago. Since then, I've added maybe a dozen things, and nearly everything is ticked off. There's only a few things on here that are not ticked off. And when anything new comes to mind that I really want to check out or experience, then I add it to that list. It's a way of honoring yourself. That's why I look at it. We are guardians of the self, or stewards of the spirit or the soul, and what's going to give us healthy pleasure. Mm. And when we can note those things, we make them tangible, and just having put that out there, it's amazing. It's like if you tell someone, for the first time, I'm going to do, you and I do triathlon, that I'm doing a triathlon, the moment you put it out there, it's like the universe works together with all of its resources to help you achieve that.
I agree with that. I've experienced it myself. Would you call that a healthy pleasure? Because I don't think many of us hear that term. And I felt like I needed to ask you a little bit more about what does a healthy pleasure? Because we all have our ideas of pleasure. But what
yes,
is
we do.
A healthy pleasure? What's the difference?
Well, I would say also, if we look at the word selfish, a lot of people say, oh, I'm being selfish, I'm taking too much time away from this or that. And so I also use the word healthily selfish, because we often misuse that word and we think I shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. But a healthy pleasure to me is one where you get healthy endorphins, for instance. If we look at the chemicals of love, they are endorphins. If we look at what people are trying to achieve by drinking, it's a state of grace, but it's artificial grace. And so the desire for a state of grace often sets people up for situations that create a state of disgrace sometimes. They put themselves in awkward positions. They take too much of something. So again, it becomes cheap grace. But I think we can embrace the good grace of doing things that feel good in the body, the mind, and the spirit. They keep you in a state of healthy integrity, let's put it that way, where what you're doing, what you're saying, and what you're experiencing all interrelate. They're not contrary.
So I like that, because when I told people that I was doing Ironman and I had a lot of these, I had a lot of health issues, but for me, my end result was to cross the finish line feeling like I respected my body and had a smile on my face. And I did do that, but it was because I was willing to be graceful. So I like the way that you've worded that, because we can all achieve. I did it. I crossed that finish line with my own personal integrity. So
absolutely.
I do like the way that you word that. The healthy pleasure is something that keeps you in alignment with your integrity, which is also your intuition, but doesn't compromise any of your morals, or you're not going to look back at it going, oh my God, why did I do that? So
that's right.
Yeah,
because someone once
a lot of
said that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, someone once said it is a daily triumph of integrity that really is commitment. And when we come away with that, the idea that grace itself is a state of gratitude. When you are swimming, biking, and running, and you're enjoying the feel of that, the Mother Nature around you, fellow competitors, the idea that you got yourself into such a state in every which way that you could compete and be out there, that you're actually on a start line instead of dreading it. And a lot of people get major anxiety building up to it. And it's like being on stage. There's some pre-event nerves, but some people, it literally twists and turns against them, and they end up getting injured literally the night before. You know, stuff where it's self-sabotage. And it's a sad thing. But when you're in a state of wonderment and appreciation and gratitude, that state of grace, it's like saying thank you to the volunteers as you go past, as opposed to being gruff at them. It makes such a difference. Being pleased when another athlete is actually alongside you, or even going faster than you, being pleased for them. I'm not saying about being pleased if you're going backwards, but to see someone else doing well pleases you rather than makes you envious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that kind of reminds, because when I did my first half Ironman in Sylvan Lake, it very much leads into this healthy pleasure stuff. I didn't realize it, but I was the last runner, and I thought,
mm-hmm,
people that were passing me on the loop, because we ended up doing 4 or 5K loops.
Right.
I thought the people that were on their fourth loop were like behind me on their second or third loop. And then when I realized, so I was like, hey, welcome, you know, you're doing great. You can do it. You can do it. And then I realized I was the last one. I'm like, huh, well, that's kind of cool too. I was still cheering them on, and I didn't even realize. I wasn't focused on that.
Good for
all.
You, because that's, so, you chose your focus. Wonderful, because the great thing is the body doesn't thrive in chaos, but it thrived in the harmony, self-esteem, the endurance, and the integrity of yourself. So
yeah,
that's wonderful news. And you weren't contaminated by your own expectations. And you may remember that when people come in last and I'm commentating, I don't think I've ever said "and the last person." I usually say words like "the final champion," because to me, at an endurance event like that, that's exactly what it is.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, you were the one that called me across that final finish line with,
yes,
8 seconds left before the official cutoff. So you made me feel very special when I did that.
Well, and you were indeed. You know, the other thing about all of that is we look at things like placebo language. versus nocebo language, you know, language that pleases us versus language that doesn't, memories that please us versus memories that don't. And they can include events of the past. Like, let's say you'd had a terrible race somewhere. If that lingered with you and you carried that without doing anything about it, it can infect all of your events in the future. You can come back to that same race and go, oh, this is where I bonked, this is where I had that crash, this is where I didn't make it in time. And that can literally zap your energy because it's turning your energy against you rather than working for you. So often I work not just collapsing boundaries of the past in terms of shock and trauma, but literally little things. If you use applied kinesiology, which I do occasionally on people, you can find out incidents that have retained at the cellular memory level the ability to literally negate an experience because of something from the past.
Mm.
And that has created anticipatory anxiety in the body.
So is that why we need to reframe the question, why?
Ah, well, I'm glad you brought that up. Reframing the question why, the reason for that is because we have a misassumption oftentimes when we, especially when we ask kids, we say, why did you do that? And they just shrug their shoulders, I don't know. And we may ask ourselves the same thing. And if we just say why, we're not getting to the real heart of the matter. And it's often difficult for the person we're asking of to fully understand their own reasons for doing it. But when we change the question based on the premise that all behaviors have a positive intent. And people will say, you mean all behaviors? And I'll say, yes, it never justifies all the behaviors by any means. But let's take the worst possible behaviors you can imagine, murder, incest, all those sorts of things. Again, it never justifies them. But if you look and say, why would someone do that? And then you say, you change that because of what I said about all behaviors have positive intent. You said, so the question becomes, what good things could a person get from doing something like that? It would become power and control. Again, never justifies it. I remember a story a few years ago about a woman who willingly drove her children into a lake and they drowned. You may remember this. It caused a furor and all the reporters saying, you know, how could a mother do that? How could a woman do that? But what happened later on when they realized what she had been telling people, that she believed that living was hell on earth and that she was forcing her children to live in hell. If you honestly believe that, you then get the answer as to the why. Again, it never justifies it. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But if she truly believed, as a loving mother, that they were in living hell, then she was trying to take them to a healthier place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a lot of people, it's why you don't want to judge what people are doing. That's why
don't
want to judge anything about what you're experiencing. It's just, you know, there's that, we never know why someone's doing. And I believe that all of the behaviors have a positive intent, whether they make sense or not. Their intention is to make the world better. So
absolutely.
So what would you say to our listeners right now who are hearing you say this and going, well, what am I doing? Like, what are some of the choices that I'm making and how is this impacting my behavior?
Well, I would say look at the negative messages you may be carrying around with you. I'm not good enough. I'll never be this, et cetera, et cetera. Are they ones that you've integrated as an adult, or ones that you heard or felt or experienced in the first 6 years of your life? Usually that's where we get majorly impacted. That's when we're in a state of what they call egocentricity, where the world seems to revolve around us in our belief up to that age, but we integrate those messages from the significant people around us. So if we're given lots of enthusiastic messages about our abilities, then life is limitless in many ways. But if it's the opposite, we have to take a look at where did these messages come from, because what they've done, they've impacted our perception of the world, and they've become our interpretations and our beliefs, and that becomes the system under which we operate.
And that's really all what we would refer to as core beliefs, correct?
Yes, That's correct, absolutely. So collapsing those, there's a number of ways to do so. But I think we need to even make a note of them. That can be a note in our minds, or write them down. What are these negative core beliefs we're wandering around with? Because it's like at times we may have the body of a 40, 50, 60-year-old, but sometimes in the position when we're put in a position of having to respond to something, it may be that the 10-year-old part of us is actually doing that. So we're not responding, we're actually reacting to something. We've already formed our answer well in advance of the question being completed, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm saying that a lot of the stuff that I do specifically is to try and ground people into the present, to clean and clear all the stuff from history. It sounds like a lot of work, but it really isn't. If you're dealing with the foundational stuff, you think of it like a high-rise building, collapsing the foundational beliefs then allows the rest to begin to crumble, because much of the high-rise buildings above it contain the same elements.
And that's really what we're talking about, doing that transformation of the overwhelm. So it's a belief mindset. So how do we work within the feeling, and how do we shift it? Can you give us some examples of how we could start doing that?
Well, let me just give you my philosophy, and then I'll get into very specifics then, if I may, because if we have to look at what is our philosophy on life, and if we understand about energy and thoughts, and that thoughts are things, and that we are 70% water, so to speak, and we recognize that if anyone's read messages from water, Masaru Emoto's work, and seen the photographs, you realize that our thoughts determine so much. And we've got to be like water in many ways, so we've got to take whatever shape we're poured into, so to speak. In other words, be prepared to change with the mold that life creates from us on a day-to-day basis. But our thoughts profoundly influence the shape of that mold, so to speak. And I subscribe not to a religion, but to a philosophy personally, and it's just one that to me is so open-ended. It's the Huna philosophy of Hawaii, which has seven basic principles. The world is what you think it is. If you think it's scary, it will be scary. It's not to say there aren't terrible things going on out there, but equally, there are wonderfully good things out there. And with an attitude of gratitude, it's amazing how many of those things come towards you. Just smiling at someone, saying thank you, you know, it's amazing that the difference those things can do. There are no limits. When you started putting this Global Emotional Awakening Telesummit together, I'm sure part of you at some point was saying, wow, that's a lot of work. It is, but it may be limitless, but you're enjoying it as it's unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to start and say, oh, but that's where I've got to get to, or that's even the limit. My life has exceeded my childhood dreams 1,000-fold. So I know that's true. Energy flows where attention goes is another one. Where we send out attention, that's where the energy goes. So we need to focus on what we do want, not on what we don't want. In other words, a lot of people are worrying, and worry is just like praying. We're praying for what we don't want in the end by putting that energy out there. We need to worry initially. In other words, put our thought on a subject that we try to come up with a solution for. But if we've tried that and there literally is no solution or obvious one, then we need to let it go. You understand where I'm going with that? It's like otherwise just worry for its own sake is using energy, but it's also putting it out into the universe and drawing more of that towards you. So focus on what you do want in your life. Now is the moment of power. That's another one of the tenets. Being in the now, getting to the now, means cleaning and clearing of the past. But when we're in the now, enjoying spontaneity as things are unfolding. The fifth one is to be to love is to be happy with. Love is the only ethic needed in Huna, so that everything you're doing is coming from a healthy place of love. That doesn't mean we don't get angry, frustrated, annoyed at things, but it means that we are in touch with that part of ourselves that very quickly can take a deep breath and say, what's the desired end result I want from this? And that is usually to find peace, to find solution and resolution. Number six is all power comes from within. In other words, the world is what we believe it is. And we can give our power away, or we can own our power and determine our own action by taking control or being at the helm of our own ship again, because many of us have lived lives where someone else is dictating for us. And the final one is effectiveness is a measure of truth. All that matters in the end is what works. There are a number of people who they've got, say, one tool at their disposal, one therapeutic tool, and that's no good for everybody. I work with a lot of people who go to AA, and AA does wonderful stuff for many, many, many people, but it's not the answer to all people who have addictions issues. You've got to be open in a holistic way to whatever works for that person.
I'm just listening to everything you have to say. What? How do you spell the philosophy that you from Hawaii?
Oh.
What is that word?
Ho'oponopono, which is H-O apostrophe O-P-O-N. O-P-O-N-O. There's a Dr. Hugh Len, H-U-W-L-E-N, and he did some remarkable work in a prison in Hawaii. And it's been around for years and years and years, but he has made it more and more popular and available to the Western world. And the other person I relate to in terms of forgiveness is Colin Tipping, who has radical forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great concept where we actually we give ourselves the freedom from the condition of resentment and stuff, because we can end up in fact being grateful to someone who may have hurt us because they helped us explore or find out more about ourselves. Even in marriages, I read a headline once that said sometimes marriages are successful because they fail. So I picked this thing up and was reading it, and it said, you know, sometimes we're married to someone for a reason, a season, or for a lifetime, but if it's for a reason, they may have been responsible for allowing us to get to a point where we see a pattern of behavior, either theirs or ours, but it allows us to look in the mirror and say, here's where I don't need to go again. Here's what I can do. Here's what I can work on. And we can thank them for even coming on that journey with us or getting us to the point where we realize we've been living with resentment. I worked with one lady one time who, she said she was angry at her husband. And we did this work, and she said, well, I'm no longer angry at my husband, but I'm angry at you. And I said, What's happened? She said, well, now I've got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. She admitted she was living in her marriage just to get back at him. And she said, I just want to stab him in the back all the time. And so she ended up realizing now she's got to go through the process for herself, because she had gotten lost in that. She was living consumed with this anger, and therefore she wasn't having a decent life. So she released them both eventually from that.
Mm. That's a wonderful story. Like, it is true, though, like the anger will shift from the person that you're holding against to the person who helped you become aware of it.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. So
hopefully then you become the proper guardian and steward of the self, and you can walk comfortably in your own skin and enjoy your own company. I keep a saying in my office, it's pretty much I'd rather be seen for who I am and be alone than to be accepted for someone I'm not and be lonely.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then you don't need someone in your life, you just want them. If you meet the right person, you want them in your life, but you're not needy in the same sense.
So how are some of the ways that people can really start to shift that belief, those mindsets?
Okay, well, what I usually start with for somebody would be a bit of inner dialogue. And by inner dialogue, I would mean I would get them to relax as much as possible in their chair, ask them just to close their eyes. And I'm just going to say, using whatever words you're comfortable with, please take a moment to remind every part of you that you have grown up, that you are presently safe in this office, and if you feel unsafe at any time, open your eyes and check where you're at, that you presently have a right to breathe fully and deeply at all times, that it is the year 2014, that you did not die. Now, I go through those sorts of things a few times. Let your body be aware of your present age. So there's a form of inner dialogue that consists of those sorts of things that I will often do just to ground someone in the now. I will then get them probably, if we were dealing with a trauma, I would usually get them to do collarbone breathing, for instance. That's on my webpage if you're sharing that. I believe we were.
Mm-hmm.
They could go on there, and it's just on the index, just click on collarbone breathing. That was something that I was introduced to by Dr. Callahan, and I use it and noticed it's great for athletes as well, by the way, but what it does, it aligns the body, the mind, and the spirit. Whereas when we anticipate something, just our thinking about something can shut something down in our system, so the energy is not flowing freely. But if I were going straight into negative core beliefs, I would often do what is called a whole brain integration. If you have time, I can lead someone through, lead you through that just as an exercise. I would then often go to, let's say someone was feeling overwhelmed. I would then do a technique whereby I get them to close their eyes and check into where you're feeling that feeling on the physical level. Where is it? And often it may be stomach, chest, in the head, that sort of thing. And then I would get them to ask inside with their eyes closed, ask inside what that feeling would look like if it were to look like something, even if it's just colors or lines. And then I get them to do the what I call the tapas pose, which is literally just cupping the hands around the ears with the fingertips touching the skin. So you've got the thumb and the fingertips of each hand around the ear. We've got 5 acupressure points around the ears. So it's not about tapping them. It's just holding them in place because you want both hemispheres of the brain to share the same information. And then I get them to observe that image. And then once they've got that image, it's like I will say, so it is yours. You've been requesting an image. You've got an image. That means it's unique to you. It's yours. You own it. Therefore, you can do anything you wish with it. You can make it bigger, smaller, change its color, send it off into the universe, hand it over to your higher power, dissipate into billions of particles. And so I would say, so I want you to command that it does whatever it is you choose to and hold that position until it's done so. And often that will shift that dynamic. It will collapse the feeling. But let's say someone was talking to me about feeling anxious in the stomach region. In other words, they've got anticipatory anxiety about a performance. I would simply get them to focus in on the anxiety rather than pretend it's not there. Focus in on it and take 2 fingers from both hands and place them underneath the eyes, just about an inch under the eyes, and just start tapping there. That is the stomach meridian point if you do acupuncture or acupressure. And so that is a very simple technique for something like that. If someone's got stuck images, frozen images of something that has tormented them for years, I would get them to focus in on the image, make sure they breathe fully and deeply so that oxygen, again, is circulating throughout the brain, and then to tap on both sides of the bridge of the nose, beginning of the eyebrow. So in other words, at the beginning of the nose, where it's next to the eyebrows, you place 2 fingers, the index finger and the middle finger from each hand, either side of that, and you focus on the image. You breathe fully and deeply, and you just keep tapping there for a while. And okay, if it's something that's non-traumatic but has caused turmoil and creates fear, then that's likely to get collapsed. If it is majorly traumatic, then there's a further exercise I do to add to that. That's called an inner child reclamation, which often I'll use a very specific technique. It's about the safety level. In other words, it would not be appropriate. Something occurs to me. Let's say the worst case scenario has happened to someone and they were threatened if they ever told someone that they would kill their family or something dramatic of that nature. And I work with people who have had those types of abuses. And I've said something like, there are ways to tell others without telling others. And a client of mine understood exactly what I meant, and she was an artist. It's not that I say that too often, by the way, but this person literally could not talk because as a child she had promised she would never tell anyone. And she was able to keep her promise because she did this artwork. She ended up having displays in a number of locations that displayed her entire healing process because she literally had some artwork that displayed the abuse that she suffered. Mm-hmm. So she didn't have to say anything, and she still honored that word. Once she had done that, then we used techniques to collapse and release the rest of the stuff because she had no more reason to fear this person. She could come into today's wisdom. It's like merging that part from the past. The same with belief systems. We need to merge them with who we are today, looking through the lens of the person we are today. Often we don't do that. We are reacting to life with the same belief systems and reactions we've had for years, and we haven't stopped to figure out, do they work for me or not?
And that's such a powerful question. Do these beliefs still work for me? Are they still protecting me, right?
And as you know, we've got three major stressors. They are fear, they are pain, and they are fear of more pain. So with those stressors around, suffering sucks. Who wants that?
I like that. Suffering sucks.
Yeah, totally. But there was Paulo Coelho, a great writer. He once said, "An enthusiastic heart finds opportunities everywhere." I love that. But Sir Edmund Hillary once said, "It's not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves." And in ourselves, he was referring to those things that really weren't about us. They were maybe just hand-me-down beliefs, or things that people hadn't dealt with in their own lives, including our parents. But this isn't dumping on parents. Nearly every time you look at their stuff, they were doing the best they could with what they had, and that's what we need to do. But we create our world with our mental chatter and live in that construct. So once we know that, it's a liberating concept. We have the benefit of a mind. We have the benefit of consciousness and awareness, and that gives us the ability to choose.
And that that leads us to the free gift that you're giving us, our listeners, is the questions that we can pose ourselves. And you refer to that a little bit more in that document. Can you tell us, as we're starting to wrap up here, can you tell us a little bit about the free bonuses that you're offering our listeners?
The questions list, I believe, was one of them, and that's, I think, about 120 questions. They're based on questions over the years that I find to be not only existential, but relevant. Now, some wouldn't be relevant to everybody, of course, but I think within those 120 questions, there are some that are very, very relevant. If you don't feel you have an answer to some that seem really stuck, even though you know you want to get an answer, a good way to do that is to take your dominant hand, write the question in the dominant hand, and then take your non-dominant hand and allow it to provide the answer. Now, some people are that aware that they will do it straight away with their dominant hand. But if you struggle with that, just put the question down in the dominant hand and let the non-dominant one give you the answer. You'll be amazed at what you find out from that.
Awesome.
And I think the other one was seeing the light.
Yeah.
Am I correct? I believe that's... Yes, okay. And seeing the light... I was here one day, and a client canceled, and I didn't have time to get another client in time. And I sat down, and for some reason, in my mind, I was seeing all these C's coming through. And I just go with the flow when stuff happens, even with clients. If I get an image of something or a flash of something, I trust my intuition, so to speak. So I just started typing down all these words with the letter C that seemed to be part of the relevance of healing and shift and change, and because it's a challenge, and I think we need to take a look at that. So next to each of the words, I have listed how, in what ways they are relevant to our world, and I think you'll find in that some maybe existential questions, but also some very meaningful questions, as opposed to the why bothering to get up each morning. We are the gift that we can give ourselves, and that gift, therefore, can be a gift to the universe if we want to take advantage of it. People we see here have addictions, but some of them choose to remain in those addictions. So we tend to think of those people in a different way, because they've become so dependent on that substance that they know inevitably some of them are going to die, and they're choosing that. They've brought it to consciousness. Other people say, this is poison to me, I don't want it, I want to shift my life, and therefore are able to begin the process, at least the first step in that, by acknowledging that they've become dependent on it and feeling helpless around it, and this is a move away from helplessness.
And that move is really the transition from going from alive to thrive, right?
Absolutely, because in the end, activity absorbs anxiety, but action steps in the end make all the difference. We may know everything there is to know. There's boundless material out there in terms of how we've arrived at where we're at. As a young kid, growing up in London, I never knew of anybody who went to counseling. I sure could have done with some to understand a lot more, but I'm so grateful to my clients. They have taught me so very much. And I certainly, it's been a long time since I felt overwhelmed, but certainly these last few days I felt like there was a lot going on that, well, I couldn't muster up enough energy to do it all in the manner I would have liked. But again, you do the best you can with where you're at any given time. And if you remember all behaviors have positive intent, you can always get to the whys. And if you look and say, why do I have that core belief in there, for instance, then you can often find, well, look what I had to listen to or look at an experience I had. And then you work on collapsing the experience because it's living usually as an energy packet within you. If you look at anxieties and they may come up trying to remind you their unfinished business, and someone may grab a cigarette and try and, you know, push it back down again or try and drown it with a drink. But unfortunately, even though that works, it works temporarily, and it comes back at you again the next day, et cetera, et cetera. So the best thing is to be able to own it, bring it up consciously, and collapse it. And that's why I totally endorse energy psychology and the tools and techniques that are out there.
Oh. You just have, you know, I could just keep talking to you for hours and hours because you have, what you're sharing with us is so powerful and so, it's life-changing, really. It's allowing us to truly move through that emotional chaos and know that we don't have to be that way. So for everyone who's listening, you can listen to, or you can find the free gifts at tenaciousliving.org/Steve King, and there you'll find the PDFs, and we'll also have a link to his website so you can find out all about everything else that he's mentioned during this last hour. So Steve, what is one thing you want to leave our people with before we sign off?
Well, I can tell you this. Everyone's had their difficult moments. Schopenhauer said, to overcome difficulty is to experience the full delight in existence. I had a thing that haunted me for years and stopped me from singing. When I was a young man, we didn't have any money, and I was at a boarding school as a subsidized student. And someone came into the school and said, the local village is looking for choir boys, and they'll pay them 2 shillings a week or something. And so I jumped at this opportunity, but I was like 13, 14, my voice was breaking, and they made us sing solo, and everyone laughed, and that affected me for years. And I always thought, I'll never, ever sing, never, ever sing. And then my wife celebrated a major birthday a couple of years ago, and I in my head, I kept having this thing about, you've got to record a CD of all the music that's been relevant in the years that you've been together. And I put these songs down as a list and got a friend there who has a recording studio, and he said, well, have you practiced them? I said, no, they've just got to come from the heart. And so I did this thing, and I still can't believe it. To me, it was one of my proudest moments. It may not be great, but as I said, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. And I'm so pleased because my wife had a lot of gratitude, so we were in a state of grace at that, and I was just so pleased. So I'm suggesting that from traumas, we can have triumphs. Someone once said, yeah, you can win more by losing. I didn't understand that at the time till I experienced my favorite Ironman, which was my slowest by 6 hours, but it was because I was accompanying my dear friend Tony Davis, who hadn't been able to do it 25 years earlier.
And, you know, we're offering just everyone that you've supported throughout the years and continue to support. It's just so humbling to have you part of this telesummit, like just sharing that brief story with how you supported someone. And it wasn't a matter of how long it took you. It was supporting them in achieving what they wanted to do. It's just,
it was a great gift for me, that's for sure.
Yeah. You're just such an amazing man. And because you also alluded to your CD, we're actually going to have that as a special offer so people can purchase those songs and get a sense of who you are and really appreciate your proudest moments. So,
thank you. That's wonderful. I appreciate that. And if anyone's interested in the sort of work I do, I would suggest checking out authors like Rupert Sheldrake, Richard Gerber, William Tiller, Bruce Lipton. Wonderful stuff. And that's where things are heading.
Oh. Like I said, Steve, we could just keep talking. I know. We're going to have more conversations, I can tell.
All right. I look forward to it.
Yeah, so I thank you for making it through the hour. You sounded wonderful.
Yeah.
Your cough was barely there. So, again, thank you so much. So I'm going to let you go take care of yourself again. Thank you for supporting our listeners so much.
Thanks very much, Carrie Ann and JJ. Cheers.
Thank you, Steve. Yes, I'm back. It's JJ Fredrickson. I am emceeing this event, and I do want to thank Steve so much. You know, when he was talking about being the last person over the line and calling them the final champion, it just brought tears to my eyes and the action steps and integrity and how we can all be champions. We can all be champions. And just a great talk. I really appreciated it. So thanks again, Steve, especially with you being sick. So we really, really appreciate having him on the call today. So Carrie Ann.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
What a wonderful interview.
Oh, I know. I really did lose track of time. So
it was such a wonderful interview. I know he was just running through techniques, but I was actually doing some. I was cupping my ears and visualizing things, and it was phenomenal. So yes, please check him out and check out the gifts he has. And where can we find the gifts on our website again?
TenaciousLiving.org/Steve King, and there you'll
find
those. Yep.
Those are free gifts. So all you have to do is sign up for the teleseminar, and those are yours. Or the telesummit, excuse me, telesummit, and those are yours. So, Carrie Ann, we have one more speaker today. One more, because we've got three great speakers on day one. So who's coming up for us later?
Wow, you know, I know, it's hard to believe. The day's almost coming to an end. We've got one more speaker, and her name is Pooja Talani. And she is an instructor for the Art of Living Foundation. And her mission in life is to help people learn the precious gift of the Art of Living and how they can do that through the art of breathing and managing their mind. It's going to be an incredible interview with her, and just having the representation of the Art of Living in this telesummit on day one is humbling. So
I've just gotten into some breath work earlier this year, and powerful, powerful stuff. I'd done different forms of meditation before, but really adding that breathing element, I was amazed at how powerful it was. And Steve referred to it as well, a certain type of breathing. So I encourage people to jump on that and share with your friends. You know, we've given you two great interviews already, and we've just gotten started. We have 20 people lined up for you throughout the week. So a lot of great information coming at you. Again, all our recordings are available for replay for up to 48 hours, actually for 48 hours. So please feel free to go back and listen to them. And again, share with your friends. If you loved an interview, if you got a nugget from one of our fabulous speakers, one of our teachers, as Carrie Ann likes to say, please share it with your friends. So anything else you want to say to wrap up the call?
Yeah, I'm just honored that you all are listening in and going on this journey with us. So thank you so much for being here on day one of the Global Emotional Awakening Telesummit. It's so exciting.
Yes. Thank you, everyone. And what time are we speaking with Pooja this evening?
We will be airing at 6 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time.
All right. 6 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the Global Emotional Awakening Telesummit. Boy, you'd think I'd have that down by now. But thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. And remember, share with your friends, and we hope to see you back here at 6 Mountain Time. Bye-bye.
Bye.